What's up? The boys are back in the building. Sean Silver here of 98.5 The Sports Hub. It's the Knuckle Push-Ups Podcast. It's the holiday season. I got to introduce my main man here, Patrick O'Connor, for another episode of the Knuckle
Pod. It's the most wonderful time of the pod.
Oh, yeah. We could just do all kinds of Christmas-themed, NBA-adjacent Christmas carols, you might say.
Sure. It's fitting seeing how most of the people who watch basketball start doing so on Christmas Day. Mm. This is the extended preseason for anyone who's not like a hoop head. Very apropos.
Yeah, and with that, we're at the quarter pole of the NBA season, which, you know, kind of gives us an opportunity to make an assessment of what we've seen, because we've been watching, maybe at the expense of other things. I got to ask you, you got your lights up, man? Because I sure don't, not at my house.
No, I didn't have any decorations up for Halloween either. Decorating is not my strong suit.
Gotcha.
But I'm looking for a weekend project, so probably run out, grab a tree, and start decorating this weekend, maybe. A nice little Saturday.
Big weekend ahead. Games for the Celtics that might bring concern to the Boston area contingent. We'll get into all of that. We're also going to walk back some of our takes from our earlier episodes. We've done 5 episodes at this point of the Knuckle Push-Ups Podcast in its current incarnation. So we're going to jump into the HTTM, no, not the Hunky Tonk Man, the Hot Take Time Machine, to revisit some of those. And we'll also play America's new favorite game, Hot Take, Take a Bus. Shout out to Uncle Trot.
It's a long hashtag, but it's fun.
So, Patrick, we're at the quarter pole of the NBA season, and I want to take, you know, your temperature on this thing. First of all, the NBA, it's never had so much parity. I look at the standings right now, and we talked about some of the preseason prognostication articles that came out, you know, people saying there are 7 teams that could win the NBA championship. There are 8 teams. There are 9 teams. Are we increasing that? Are there like 10 or 12 teams who you could logically see making a run at an NBA title? We've had some surprises. We've had some teams that, you know, maybe have disappointed a little bit to this juncture, but there's still a lot of talent there, and they're waiting in the wings. The standings are stacked.
Agree. I think there's probably only, in seasons past, there's really been, you know, 1 or 2 or maybe 3 teams that could potentially win an NBA title. 4 if you want to stretch it. Ultimately, it's going to come down to 2, and then it's largely a toss-up. Right, so we're coming out of an era in the NBA where it was either the Cavs or it was the Warriors for a long time, mm-hmm. right? And there were always teams that were floating around, like maybe this is the year that Houston puts it together, or maybe this is the year that Boston puts it together, right? To kind of like just kind of upset the favorite. Ultimately, what it came down to was LeBron versus Steph for 5 years running, and this year is a little different, but for a bunch of different reasons. Like, so there's been some shakeups. These teams look differently now. We've moved from a big three to a dynamic duo set up in the league, and there's only so many teams that have a dynamic duo. But while there's 6, 7, 8, 9 teams that are with at least an interesting thought experiment, I actually think there's probably even more, because not for a good reason. Because the injury bug is really kind of sweeping through the NBA. And as we saw in the finals last season, you know, just a rash of terrible injuries, like, really clipped the Warriors. And that's been continuing to happen. Guys are getting hurt pretty fast. So while, yeah, on paper, there's probably 2 or 3 teams that can probably do it this season, depending on injuries, momentum, and time of season when someone could potentially go down, knock on wood, hopefully they don't. That could really change a lot of things up. And there's more teams in a pounce position than there are not. So it's really up in the air. There's probably 10 teams that could potentially be there depending on how the chips fall.
Yeah, there's definitely some upstarts, you know, like a team like the Mavericks, who you love. We're going to talk some more about them. You know, the Miami Heat, how did they wind up in the picture where you could perhaps seriously consider them as a contender? Or maybe, you know, these are just teams that we ultimately wind up dismissing. They are playoff fodder for some other buzzsaw that's going all the way. But like you said, opportunism, and teams are a bit more vulnerable out there. So the talent in the league spread out quite a bit. Along with that, something that we've been seeing coming along for several years now, the offense in the NBA is the pace of play is at its highest since the 1985-86 season. It is nuts, the type of stuff that we're seeing on a nightly basis. And the lines that our favorite players are putting up just completely out the window, just bonkers, crazy go nuts.
Why do you think that is, Sean? Do you think that all of a sudden everyone went to like the Dream Shake Academy over the summer or did ISO drills with Kobe in LA and something just clicked, or like, or what do you think is leading to this offensive boom?
Well, I think it's several factors because, you know, Hakeem's been getting business from big men for a number of years. You remember Amari Stoudemire went and worked with him. Dwight Howard went and worked with him. It was like, let's get some big men to develop some post moves. And it never really took because the game was moving away from the pivot. And that's really what it is. The NBA hasn't found a solution to the three-point barrage. And if defenses are coming up with a way to cover the perimeter, guys are just moving it out further and shooting 25- and 28-foot three-pointers with no conscience. This is only actually attainable because of the way the game is called now. You can't be physical out around the perimeter. A player like a Tony Allen just couldn't exist in the league anymore, and I think I picked that tidbit up off of a recent Ringer pod. But I thought it was a very interesting point that was made by whomever, probably like Chris Vernon.
It's got to be Chris Vernon. It's
got to be Chris Vernon, right? If it's a Tony Allen reference. But defenses just can't play defense anymore. Really, the only way that the only thing that a defender can do is take a charge to stop the offense, which it's not a basketball play. So, you know, to my point, it's kind of an artificial inflated bump in statistics right now that we're seeing. And I just, I don't know. I mean, I watched a lot of Knicks Heat games in the 90s. I hate watched the NBA for a lot of years, but they came out of it. You know, the NBA has always found a way stylistically to rise above whatever's been ailing them. And right now, I just feel like stylistically, a lot of people may like it, but it's kind of like baseball in that you're getting a lot of home runs. And that's cool at first, but when you just keep watching balls flying over the fence, when you just keep watching three after three after three, and teams really only being successful in one way, that may be analytically good, but as a fan, it's just not. I don't know. I'm not buying it. Some other people may be in. Are you in? Are you dipping a toe or are you out?
So I'm an NBA fan the same way I'm a Democrat. I don't really care who the nominee is. I'll probably vote blue. You know, so
yeah.
If the NBA is my sport. So, I mean, like, all right, here's a good thought experiment for you. Give me one word to describe the post-MJ, pre-LeBron era of the NBA.
Uneven.
I would say bleak. So it was not great, man. Yeah. I mean, that was a real weird downtime for the NBA.
All right.
Like, so that was like Malice at the Palace was floating around, like the dress code stuff.
Yeah, we're talking like 98 to, well, 03. LeBron. Yeah, LeBron was 03. The Malice was actually in the fall of 04, but
But like as far as like the people who embodied the Malice at the Palace, like everyone who was involved in that, Reggie Miller was like the old man on the floor at that point, but you had Ron Artest, you had Jermaine O'Neal. It was this era of basketball where everyone was like, I don't know, it was like almost like it was the common knock on everything was this is like thug basketball, right?
Yep.
And it was not looked at as like the beautiful sport.
Right.
And like no, it was no symphony. You weren't setting any of those games to like to symphonies and watching it in slow-mo on YouTube the way you did Spurs games in kind of the mid-2000s. Mm-hmm. So, but that's all to my point is like that's like the NBA goes through kind of like these peaks and valleys in between superstars. And LeBron is kind of like, I mean, God only knows how long he's going to play. He's in year 17 now, but we're just waiting for the next guy to rise up. So that's kind of Steph Curry now. Like Steph Curry started raining threes and everyone started raining threes. And now everyone's trying to do it and the game has really flowed that way. But it's just going to keep flowing that way until someone does something completely different and changes the model back. No one saw LeBron James coming. You know, the same way where it could be Giannis, it could be Luka, and that could wind up leading to a complete, like, Euro style of hoops or, like, just importing more European players or players from across the globe, which is going to change the game again. So what we're seeing right now is very different, but I don't think it's going to continue in the same way. It's just kind of like it's going to level out until something else completely swings it back the other way.
Yeah, if you look at NBA in the late 90s, early 2000s, I mean, that's probably embodied by Allen Iverson
right,
and the hip-hop culture at the time. So Steph Curry is kind of like your generational Iverson. Yeah, he's got a lot more rings, but if you look at, like, what's cool now, it's like Steph Curry's kind of a square.
Yeah, it's fundamental, man.
Kind of like a kid who's really into, like, art or something. I mean, those are – It's not like the hip-hop culture of 20 years ago where, right, you know, you had, like, street cred. And even if you didn't, you acted like you did. Now, like, you're kind of allowed to be, like, your awkward childhood self, your creative self, and, yeah, like, expressing yourself artistically that way is cool. You know, like, nerd culture, video games, like, all that stuff sells now. Like, the NBA stars now they're quirky, you know? They're not tough. So, you know, Steph Curry is someone like that, or James Harden or Russ Westbrook with the way he dresses. Those are guys like that. And they are the guys who, I assume, you know, historically we're going to look back, are carrying the torch for whoever that next generational player is. I mean, you could say that Steph Curry took the throne from LeBron, but the fact is, sure, LeBron is still hanging around in the, you know, as the Warriors crash and burn, sitting there ready to take another title at age 36. It's crazy.
Well, yeah, I also think that, like, the NBA, it's not a relay race, right? I mean, MJ didn't just hand a baton over to LeBron. Right. It winds up being that there's someone in the NBA who's playing right now who in 5 years we're going to look back and be like, kind of be like, where did this guy come from, or why weren't we paying attention to this guy sooner? Like, and it's going to be because the league starts modeling. There's going to be more people modeling after that person's style of game. Just like with Curry. It's not like Curry, like, on day one just started raining threes and the Warriors were good. It took a good clip of time. And that he, like, there were so many questions just on his ankles. So Steph Curry wasn't even Steph Curry until 5 years ago. So I don't know who it's going to be, but once that there's another paradigm shift, and there always is, then, like, the game itself will kind of follow and change back. People aren't going to stop shooting threes anytime soon, but they are going to develop other weapons. They're going to be more and more important to round out someone's game. It's probably going to wind up being, like, you know, I don't know if we're going to see a complete mid-range revolution, but different ways to attack the paint and to kind of get around different rules is how it's – someone's going to crack the code. My guess is we're not even asking the right questions right now. Some real Roddy Piper shit.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the NBA is a microcosm of America. You're constantly looking at a way to get around the rules to your benefit until they change the rules, and then you look at a way to get around them again. One guy who abides by the old rules, the old way of doing things, is Kevin Durant. It was interesting to see him have a thread with Matt Moore, the Hardwood Paroxysm account on Twitter. Like, just talking about how, you know, players aren't coached to do the mid-range anymore. It's just threes and layups, and if you're in a certain part of the court, you're either dishing out to the three-point line, you're just completely passing up those shots. To me, it's not great for the product. I'm going to watch it anyways. It's just wild that we're seeing some of these scores here. And as opposed to in the 80s when it was like Paul Westhead, Doug Moe, fast break Denver Nuggets basketball that was putting up 150, 160 points. Now it's just raining three-pointers, much like the Weather Girls with It's Raining Men, the one-hit wonder that we all know and love. We'll probably take that one out in post.
I wouldn't. I would definitely leave all of this in. I think that – but no, I mean, you're right. So it's really interesting that Durant's like, well, people aren't – we're not coached to hit the mid-range. Right. But that's because of what we're currently seeing. Like before, like in the 80s, no one was coached to take a three.
Right.
You know, it's like
it was a bonus, it kind of has to make it.
Right. It has to kind of come organically. So who knows? Maybe Evan Turner was right 3 years ago and said the mid-range is going to come back and someone's just going to get unbelievable at, like, you know, maybe the mid-range hook winds up being, it's not just a Magic Johnson special. Maybe that becomes the new shot. Who knows? I mean, but that's the thing, man. I mean, it's, someone will start doing something that's so unbelievable that people try to mimic it.
5 years, 10 years from now, we're going to be seeing the mid-range hook on a hoverboard. Mark it down.
Yeah. But, like, think about the Euro step. Like, when did you start hearing about the Eurostep, and when did you start noticing it, and when did you stop noticing it?
Gosh, right? I mean, like, well, it originated with Saronis Marcellonis, but for the longest time, everybody was just like, well, that was Saronis Marcellonis' move.
Right.
Then in the mid-2000s, when you had LeBron and a bunch of, you know, keen basketball-observing minds go and bring it back, then you're like, oh, hey, wow, that's that thing from the late 80s that that dude Saronis Marcellonis used to do for the Run TMC Warriors. I don't know why it wasn't Run TMCS with Tim, Mitch, Chris, and Saronis. Maybe it just didn't land all that well. Maybe, you know, the marketing group kind of purged Saronis from that trio there. You notice it when the guys who are dominating the game pick it up as a big part of how they're successful.
Right, and you stop noticing it when everyone does it.
Literally everyone.
But do you remember who sponsored Iverson? Was he an Adidas guy or
a Nike
guy?
He was a Reebok guy.
He was a Reebok guy,
yeah.
That's right. There were three options. I chose two, both of which were incorrect. So, but I remember one of his commercials was literally a diagram of him doing the crossover. So that was like, you know, coming up, I'm like, okay, so that's an Iverson thing, the crossover. That's AI. That's what he does. That's Jules right there.
Yep.
But now absolutely everyone does. You have like big centers crossing people up.
Right.
Because it's just part of everyone's game. So, I mean, the three as well. Like, where it's like, there might be people who it's like, cannot shoot a three to save his life. Like, Rondo was never considered a good three-point shooter. Mm-hmm. He's having an unbelievable three-point shooting season this season. In like
Which
year,
is crazy.
Yeah, in like year 15 for Rondo.
Yeah.
Dwight Howard hit a three the other night.
Yes, he did.
So it's one of those things where more people add it to their game. It just kind of becomes part of what you do and do well. But you live by the sword, die by the sword. And for teams that are more than often dying by the sword, you're going to have to develop other weapons as well. It's just a matter of time until NBA Twitter starts paying attention to those things.
Yeah, we're going to see it all. I mean, the way that big men are adopting little man habits now, it's kind of bizarre. But I guess it makes sense. You know, people are going to cop and make their own all the things that, you know, look like they work for people. And coaching staffs are going to encourage their players to adopt all these things. And
I want to talk about Rey Mysterio Jr.
You do?
In 1995, 96.
Yes.
Did you ever see anyone do a Hurricane Rana like Rey Mysterio Jr.?
No.
Yeah, you want to know why?
I had seen the Frankensteiner.
That's right. You saw a Frankensteiner, not a Hurricane Rana. But now, all the crazy shit that he used to do that you're like, I can't believe he's defying gravity.
Everybody does.
Everyone can do it. There's a guy in New Japan named Lance Hoyt. he's 7 feet tall and can do a lot of the stuff Mysterio does.
That's crazy.
It's unbelievable. It's nuts. But like, the Big Show can do moonsaults, man.
Yep.
Keith Lee is the most... Like, he's a guy in NXT.
Yes.
His body type does not make sense for his moveset. It's unbelievable. It's like watching the Incredible Hulk do backflips. It's unreal. So my point is that these different moves, they get kind of injected into whatever culture it is that you're thinking about, and more people try to do those things, right? So the NBA used to be just like the land of the giants. Right, and then you got a lot more dynamic with guys like in the 6'3" to 6'7" range.
Yep.
But then all the things that made those guys unique started getting adopted by the guys that were 6'8" plus. That's why you have a team like the Sixers, who it's like the shortest guy on the team is 6'8". They can all handle the ball. So you just kind of like, everyone, once something works, everyone adopts that moveset. They all work on those skills. Those become the new fundamentals, and it's only a matter of time before something shifts back to get around those things. That's what I love about the NBA. It moves and shifts a lot faster than any other major sport, other than pro wrestling.
Hence the reference to Rey Mysterio. Patrick, you want to jump in the hot take time machine?
Dude, I was born in the hot take time machine.
So the hot take time machine, a.k.a. the hot take back. This is where we're going to run back three things that we have said in one of the first four, maybe five episodes of the Knuckle Push-Ups podcast. And we're going to revisit what we said and see if it still stands. We've got all of, what at this point, 6 weeks of an NBA season under our belts. There's a lot of things that we could have been right on. There's definitely a lot of stuff that we were wrong on.
The number one thing I want to apologize for is saying that the Lakers are trash, because I want that to be true. It's the only thing on my Christmas list is for the Lakers to implode. But if I'm, you know, I would be doing myself, yourself, and this podcast, this institution, a disservice if I didn't walk that one back.
The institution of knuckle push-ups.
That's right. You know, we do a lot of hero ball here, but every once in a while you got to give back. And I'm giving this one back because the Lakers on paper in September looked like they were one turned ankle away from being garbage again.
Yep.
And I, from looking at like the people who they had signed on that team and like the supporting cast they had around AD and LeBron, just really looked like this is not an NBA roster that's ready to compete in the West. Now, granted, the rising tide lifts all ships, and there's no stronger tide than LeBron and Anthony Davis, who are really both playing arguably how they have always meant to be playing, and the fact they're doing it together is fun to see. Every time I watch LeBron, even though he's wearing purple and gold and I'm conditioned to really, really dislike everything that's going on, the one thought that crosses my mind is that I'm not going to get to see too many more of these. This is special, you know, and the Laker, like the whole team is really playing like that. Now, granted, the injury bug, I do think it's looming large over the city of Los Angeles. So you never know what's going to happen, but yeah, I got to take that back. I really thought they'd be garbage, and they're one of the best teams in basketball right now.
Well, one of the things you said too is that LeBron was probably going to stick it in cruise control and just get to April, and what we've seen instead is him going full throttle, putting up triple doubles, and really setting the pace with the Lakers in the early going here. And no, I don't think that trash. I mean, it's easy to have an inflammatory word attached to something. I don't think you call them necessarily trash. I just think that, you know, and to your credit, you weren't saying that they were going to live up to maybe the lofty expectations that some had for them, particularly the LeBron fawners out there in the media.
Right, exactly. I mean, my pick was for the LA teams. It's still the Clippers.
Yeah,
but
they're real.
I thought that the Lakers were just going to – I thought they were going to look like the 2012 Lakers, where it was Kobe, Nash, Dwight, Ron Artest, before he was Panda Friendship.
Yeah, Pau.
And Pau. And I was like, what team is going to beat this team? And they imploded almost instantly. So that's what I was really envisioning for the Lakers, just because that's just kind of how it goes sometimes. And NBA karma is real. So I was waiting for karma to come back down, but it has not. Yet, and it may not, which is a real bummer, because I just need the Celtics to win one before the Lakers can win two.
Yes, please. Also, karma is a chameleon. I want to walk back, hop into the hot take time machine here, just dip my toe a little bit, get comfortable. On opening night, I felt uncomfortable watching the Toronto Raptors with a great deal of bluster celebrating getting their championship rings, and we spent a segment talking about, you know, has an NBA champion ever looked like this the following year, meaning they lost their key player. To me, it kind of seemed like the Jackson 5 without Michael.
Right.
And you know what? The Raptors have completely discredited that take. They've kept moving forward. Pascal Siakam is an ascendant superstar. I don't buy the Fred VanVleet is an all-star hype. Again, what do I say every week? Point guard is the easiest position in the NBA to replace. Fred VanVleet is a nice player. I don't think he's an all-star, but there is a ton of talent on this team. They're going to be a factor in the playoffs. I don't necessarily know if they're better than the Eastern Conference's elite, but that's why they play the games, baby.
I also think Fred VanVleet is going to get paid this offseason.
Yeah,
I don't know who's
going
to pay him, but with a real... Like, I would say it's a light class of free agents this summer. Yeah, and I think Fred is going
to
get maxed out. I don't know who's going to pay him, but someone is going to.
All right, P, what else you got there?
So the next take I want to kind of revisit here is that the Mavs duo is just as good as any other duo in the NBA. The Luka-KP combo is very strong. So that's kind of what I've been riding on. I do want to walk that back slightly. I do think they're a good duo, but it's not because they're a duo. It's because Luka is one half of it. So if we wanted to take this back to wrestle comps, I would say that the KP-Luka tandem are the Rockers, because one of them is Shawn Michaels and one of them is getting Jannettied right out of Dallas right now. And I think Kristaps, I mean, maybe he's not full Kristaps yet.
Possible.
And I think he could get there. Like my hope remains high. But this is not a duo game. This is a Luka game. Like, you could put anyone who plays with Luka is instantly going to feel the effects of playing with Luka. And they're running on Luka power right now in Dallas. Yeah. Everyone on the team is having a great season, largely because of what Luka is able to do.
Yeah, just look at Timmy Hardaway Jr.
Exactly.
Look at your boy Maxi Kleber, who we're going to find a way to mention every single podcast. I mean,
hell yeah.
Porzingis right now is succeeding.
Maxi Kleber, a.k.a. the German Clint Capella.
So Maxi Kleber is going to get paid at some point, is what you're saying.
100%. And he looks really good because he plays with Harden. So, I mean, it's the same exact relationship.
Porzingis.
Just a couple towns over.
Porzingis right now succeeding pretty much as like a spot-up shooter in that offense. It's kind of wild because you know there's a lot more than that to him, but it may take some time. And you know what? If Porzingis can steal some of the attention away from Luka, that's a team that I am very, very scared of. But,
yes,
you know, it remains to be seen. And still, you know, do you think Timmy Hardaway is going to have, or Timmy Jr., is going to have this kind of season all season? I mean, it's very possible with the way that Carlisle has them playing right now.
I think you see that the team that I think is doing that really well now. I mean, I'm biased because I'm a Celtics fan, and I'm biased because I was at the Celtics game last night. Mm-hmm. But one of the big things that it led to a huge game by Jaylen Brown last night was that a lot of the attention goes to Kemba, which frees up a lot of opportunity for guys like Tatum and Brown. And Brown really cashed in on that last night.
Absolutely.
So as Luka becomes more of a known quantity, and we've already seen teams kind of shifting their defense to handle him now or try to neutralize him now, as that keeps happening and as Kristaps and that team continues to gel, you're going to see those things. Like, Luka's going to draw a double or triple, and it's going to free up Porzingis to either spot up shoot or to work the inside or anything, or to feed it to my man Maxi Kleber on a breakaway or a former part-time Celtic Dwight Powell. I mean, or Seth Curry or Tim Hardaway Jr. or any of the guys in Dallas. I mean, I think that, like, but that's the benefit you have of playing with, like, a not only a generational talent but a gravitational talent like Luka. So it's a slight walk back in the hot take time machine here, where the Mavs duo is not as good as anyone else, but Luka can hang with anybody.
I'm going to walk another one back, kind of with a bit of a caveat here, but I came out, I'm a big roster construction guy. I'm not big on superstar models. I want to see, you know, like the 04 Pistons. I want to see teams winning the NBA championship. I want to see teams that, to me, have intriguing roster construction. In the Eastern Conference, I said that was Indiana. In the Western Conference, I said that was the Jazz. And, I know that doesn't necessarily mean that they're a favorite to win the chip or anything like that. But the Jazz, not looking great right now. As of this conversation, they are 12-10, a bit underwhelming. Mike Conley has not been Mike Conley. When Donovan Mitchell, a guy who needs the ball to succeed, kind of leading things there, you know, Conley's just looked a bit out of sorts. And Joe Ingles is a missing person right now. Hopefully not a member of the 80s band Missing Persons, known for their hit Walking in L.A.
Unfortunately, is a member of three fantasy basketball teams for me. So
He is not a missing person on your fantasy basketball roster. He is a very present person who is killing your roster.
Yeah, a very present missing person.
So, you know, Joe Ingles, I mean, as goofy as Joe Ingles is a big part of why the Jazz have been successful in recent seasons. Bogdanovich has been great for them. Donovan Mitchell, Mike Conley, still trying to figure it out. But one thing you said, Quinn Snyder is a real coach. They're a veteran group of professionals. They may take a step back, but they're going to be able to figure it out by the end of the season. That's why we don't make assessments based on a quarter of a way in.
That's right. I mean, the Rockets, in both of the last two seasons, not a great start, but were there right at the end. So the Jazz have been coming on. I think you're right. I think that it's been a little dicey, but you can't rule them out.
All right, we got a third one, a third bubbling take here to revisit.
I would like to add a caveat to this take that the Philadelphia 76ers are my wrestle comp for the Legion of Doom. And my original take was like, how are you going to compete against these guys? Like, when you're facing the Legion of Doom, it's two giant dudes with spiked shoulder pads,
yep,
face paint, war paint, riding down to the ringside on Harleys with a ventriloquist dummy. It just was incredibly intimidating. So that's what I thought of when I thought of like the Philadelphia 76ers. But here's my caveat. I'm not worried about, we're not facing the Legion of Doom 91 here. We're facing the Legion of Doom 97. All right. And like, let me, just to like, you know, in case you're not way up on Monday Night Raw from like the mid 90s, that's when the Legion of Doom were old. The abs had faded into a singular ab, and it was really trading on nostalgia. And I think that
you had to bring Sonny in.
That's right. It's just, you're trying all kinds of stuff to try to keep this thing going and make a team that was losing relevancy seem relevant. Now, while the Sixers are, they're relevant and they're a pretty decent team. They're number four in the East right now. They're just not playing for the now. They're reminiscent of like LeBron's Cavs both times in like the final run of his year in both stints there, where it's like, we're playing for the playoffs here. We're trying to stay healthy for the playoffs. So that's not going to help with chemistry or bonding or getting the team to gel or anything. Either you're going to have a lot of losses that could have been wins for the Sixers. They're just not as scary as I had built them up to be. So that's my take back. That's my walk back for Philly.
Speaking of that wrestling episode of knuckle push-ups, one thing I said is that potentially if things keep going poorly in Portland, that Damian Lillard could barbershop window the Blazers and just put, you know, super kick CJ McCollum and end that partnership that everybody has really enjoyed watching for the last half decade there. I don't see that happening. And I don't think it's entirely Carmelo's doing, but he did stop the bleeding. Bringing Carmelo Anthony into the Blazers did stop the bleeding, at least temporarily. It's on Terry Stotts to figure out long-term what you're doing with this personnel and potentially a Yusuf Nurkic coming back into the picture. Maybe you decide to make a trade, move a guy like Hassan Whiteside or whatever for some front court help. I'm not sure exactly what happens there.
They seem like a Danilo Gallinari destination to me.
Yes. Yes, there's a professional scorer right there. We are not tanking. But for last year's Western Conference finalist who came out the gate so poorly with Damian Lillard playing out of his mind, I don't think he has it in him to turn on Portland. I think he has too much invested in his relationship with that market to pull off a heel turn. So at this point, like I said, they've managed to stop the bleeding. Carmelo Anthony with a little nostalgia run here, and it's working for the Blazers, at least in the interim, keeping their superstar maybe a little bit happier than he was, say, 2-3 weeks ago.
And the other thing for Dame, correct me if I'm wrong, isn't he currently the highest paid player in the history of the NBA?
Yeah, I believe so. He's got, what, a 4 or 5 year deal with them for big, big money.
Big money. So to that point, it's like, A, why would you want to leave? And B, how could you? Like, who are they going to? I don't think anyone else is going to be able to pay him that money. So it wouldn't be like, he wouldn't be leaving for like a monetary situation. I also don't know if you can find a better basketball situation, because while point guard is the easiest position to replace in the NBA, any team that he would want to go play for already has a pretty high level point guard. Mm-hmm. So I think it's kind of, it's a marriage of convenience. It just so happens that they're in love.
Yeah, but I also think that, you know, Damian Lillard, regardless of what position he plays, he's one of the top 10 players in the NBA easy.
Yeah.
So anybody's going to want to take that guy. And if he, you know,
oh, yeah, this isn't a desire thing. I just don't know who could actually do it, you know,
because
of his money.
But if he wanted out of Portland, if he wanted to make things miserable there because he was miserable, if he wanted to bring the whole thing down, He very well could. I just don't think that he's gonna. And yeah, maybe the fact that they found that perfect match. They found that soulmate in each other.
Coach Mello.
Now granted, it's not gonna result in a finals trip. It's probably not gonna even result in a Western Conference finals trip. As of right now, it may not even result in a playoffs trip. I mean, they are still outside the playoff pictures to the fading Phoenix Suns, a team that, you know, without Aaron Baines isn't looking so plucky anymore. But
right,
at least in Portland right now, things are close to getting back. You know, they're 5-5 in their last 10. I think they've won 3 out of 4, so they're looking a little bit better.
I think the most interesting thing about the Blazers right now is that Pau Gasol has joined the coaching staff.
Yeah.
Like, and I think that just goes, hopefully that's kind of something we'll see more of out of that team, where that's a pretty big selfless move, you know, to be like, it's so, I don't know, maybe there's something in the water out there where people are just more accepting of not necessarily the role they want, but the role that they are best suited for now.
I like it. Maybe there's some magic to Pau Gasol, the llama, as a assistant coach of the Portland Trailblazers. All right, so we've gone back into the hot take time machine. We've taken our lumps. Let's take a second here, a little palate cleanse, to look at the road ahead for the Boston Celtics. You were at the game last night, that being Wednesday night, because we're recording this in the
in
the evening hours on a Thursday. So you saw them with a comeback win over the Heat, who admittedly were probably a little gassed from being up late, beating Toronto in overtime the night before. We were both at TD Garden for the Celtics beating the Nets the night before Thanksgiving. And in between there, you had a home-and-home with the Nets where the road game did not go very well. You had a game against the Knicks where the Celtics did what they had to beat the Knicks, which isn't all that hard to do. Given you know how they've been playing, given what it looks like on the schedule ahead, they got a couple of tough matchups coming up in the next week. How are you feeling about the Celtics right now, Patrick?
Well, between recordings here, they've got 4 games. They've got 3 at home, 1 away. So they've got Denver on the 6th. That's going to be a tough, tough game. This is going to be the first time the Seas have been challenged like this in a couple weeks. I was really kind of fearing their West Coast trip, but they hung really well with everybody.
Yeah.
I think their game against the Clippers was just awesome from bell to bell. So hopefully they can bring that passion back, and then like having a little home court advantage would lift them over. I also think Denver they're really solid, but they're feeling the effects of the first quarter of the season thus far. Right before we started recording, I saw that Mook Morris and the Joker got into a scrap at Madison Square Garden.
Uh-oh.
Who knows? We'll see what kind of shape they're in when they come in. But I think that's going to be the toughest game of this slate. Cleveland, as long as they show up and they don't try to take it off, which is something the Celtics, it's kind of bit them in the ass before. They played down to the level of their opponent as opposed to playing up to their potential.
Well, when they had Kyrie, they did.
Yeah, very true. And that's not a problem that we have anymore. I'm sorry. It's not an opportunity that we have anymore. Trying to stay positive here. Trying to channel my inner LeBron and just stay positive.
Zen master, Patrick O'Connor.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. I have many things. An NBA theist, a Zen master, a dog owner, a podcaster. Welcome to Knuckle Pushups. Cleveland too. I think you're looking at probably, I'm hoping for 3 out of 4 wins here. I'm a little worried about the Philadelphia matchup, but I think this is a different Celtics team than what you'll see on opening night. And I'm excited to see what type of reception Al Horford gets coming back to Boston for the first time.
Yeah, I'm interested in that as well. I think he gets a tribute video. Not that it really matters all that much, but this is stuff that people talk about. I think he gets the tribute video, and I hope that the reception is positive, because this is a guy that deserves a positive reception. He was the biggest free agent to join the Celtics since 1994, and in his first year, they improved in the win column. In his second year, they improved in the win column, and we all know what happened last year. It was not Al Horford's fault. He was very honest when he spoke with Steve Bulpet. He pounded at his chest right where his heart is and basically said, you know, I didn't know if I could come back after last year. I had to move on. I take that at face value. I believe Al Horford. I think he was an excellent Celtic, a good contributor here, an all-star level player, and I wish him the best, even though Philadelphia sucks and I hope they lose. Now, let's be real about this four-game stretch here. Denver is a toughie, but I feel like they are maybe the softest. One of the softest
of the West Coast toughies. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, they haven't really figured out the special sauce this year, even though they have a really impressive record. I don't think they're playing as well as people expected out of them. And I think they're more fallible than some of these other Western Conference heavyweights, perhaps because their stronger players aren't as elite necessarily. They're not the type of guys who are going to say, get the foul calls. Their bench is not full of guys. It's full of a lot of guys who are relatively unproven. So, Denver, yeah, it's a tough matchup. Cleveland, forget. Indiana and Philly, those are the ones that I worry about. I worry about Indiana. I think Indiana's got two huge dudes there in that front court, and yeah, the Celtics have none. The big man situation still very fluid for Boston right now. You know, it's Daniel Tice. He's doing some things really well, but he's not really doing all the things that you were hoping for him to do, one of which was also spread the floor. So offensively, they're taking their lumps, even though Tice has been throwing a block party all season. As far as Philadelphia, it's the same problem, I think, that existed opening night. And again, it's a size thing. So are we going to see more Enes Kanter? Brad Stevens has been a little bit more confident turning to Kanter. He's not getting the huge minutes so far. Part of that may be that he's still trying to come back from the injury. But I'd like to see Enes Kanter get some serious run and see what he can do when you are matching up with a bunch of monuments on the other side of the court.
The one thing I will say about Philly is that they remind me of a team that's going to win the one that counts, you know, where like that's going to be their mentality. So they won on opening night. That's a big statement game. I could see them, like, I don't know, not bringing the like everything that they have to a, you know, mid-December game against a rival.
Okay, like, that's fair. Like,
they could be. I don't think they're going to come in being like, we're going to throw everything at you guys and beat you on your home court. I can see them being like, oh, you know, we're playing. And if they lose, then they're like, yeah, it's just one game. And if they win, they're like, oh, it's just one game. Like, I don't think they're going to play with any gravitas, essentially.
That ties back into the point you made kind of about them being the 1997 Legion of Doom. They could also say, if he dies, he dies.
He dies, he dies.
And just be very indignant out there. Because the 76ers, they do petty well. So we'll see.
Damn right.
We will see what happens. Will there be any fisticuffs out on the floor? But the Celtics with three or four at home, that certainly helps things at this juncture. Inching toward the return of Gordon Hayward, looking at potentially Christmas for him. And they've been playing good basketball without him. I mean, sure, there's some cracks. There's some things that you could really look at with the magnifying glass and say, oh, well, you know, their defense really isn't at the level that you want. It's not consistent night in, night out the way that you want. Or, oh, you know, offensively some things are missing sometimes. Sure, yeah, you can look at all those things. But I think when you get a player back the caliber of Hayward, if they can just put that all together, what we've been seeing from their elite players without Hayward, if they're able to integrate him back into the mix, that's a very dangerous team. So very hopeful for the Celtics, even though they got some tough opponents coming up here over the next few nights.
That's why you play the game, baby.
Speaking of which, when you play the game, you got to be ready to come with a take. So let's get into, I don't know if it's America's, you know, favorite new podcast segment. I don't even know if it's the new favorite podcast segment of New England or, you know, Eastern Massachusetts. I will say this, Knuckle Pushups podcast, now available on Apple Podcasts, now available on Spotify, now available on Google Podcasts. So you can listen to us using various media. I don't know if that's a plural or what I'm doing with that at all, but we're doing it. So, hot take a bus.
So after a nice serving of humble pie where we like took a look at some of the things we're a little overzealous about with our takes, we jumped in the hot take time machine, had a nice palate cleanser, a nice calming cup of sherbet to kind of cleanse the palates here before we bring it on home with dessert, where we both get really worked up and let off some steam here while we take a bus. If this is your first time listening to Knuckle Pushups, Take a Bus is where we take a look at some of the hottest takes floating around the NBA right now. and either agree with it and say that's a hot take and why we agree with that, or that's something to keep an eye on, or we tell it to take a bus, which is pack up all your stuff and get out of here because that's trash. And we're gonna hand it off back and forth here to kind of see where me and the big guy are standing on a couple topics.
All right.
So Sean, I've got one for you.
Yes, sir.
This is tailor-made for you. I think I can predict your answer.
Okay.
But Twitter personality and Yahoo Sports employee LeJethro Jenkins has called Bob Cousy the most overrated player in the history of the game. Sean, your thoughts?
Take a bus, LeJethro. Real name, John Nichols.
Drag him. Drag him.
No. I don't need to do that. Listen, I have a lot of respect for somebody who is doing the things that we want to do.
Sure.
This is a guy who, and I read up on this guy because I wasn't familiar with him. I do know who Dragonfly Jones is. Apparently they have a podcast together called Jenkins and Jones.
Okay.
So two Twitter personalities on the NBA. Maybe it was just the sort of thing where I had my eyes closed on some hot take artists that I need to be following on Twitter. This guy was an admissions counselor at his alma mater and wanted to break into the NBA game, did some punditry online, did some hot takes, and Yahoo Sports comes knocking as of last year and says, hey, do that same thing for us. Help our brand, help engage people on social media. So he's doing that. So I respect that. But
yeah.
Garbage take. I mean, this is just a trash take. This is dragging, an easy target, a 91-year-old dude who played back starting before my dad was even born, when the NBA was a completely different product. And just the guy looks like Stanley from The Office trying to dribble a basketball sometimes. But he originated the behind-the-back pass, for God's sake. There's just a variety of things to Bob Cousy that took basketball the way it was played to the next level in the 1950s and 60s. Seven-time NBA assist leader, all-star every season of his career, six-time NBA champion, which are things that he admits to in the video. I'm sorry. You don't come at Boston like that. Yeah, we're going to get extremely mad online about what you said. Yeah, some weirdos are going to come out that I don't want to associate myself with. And you may quote tweet those people, Mr. Jenkins. However, it's a trash take. Stop it. Just stop it. Get some help.
Sean, way to take a bus on the high road. I appreciate that. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. It's an interesting take for sure, but it's running on cherry-picked data, I think. So
yeah.
My thought is like, yeah, is he a top 50 player? I don't know, but who on that list is? So I think the question really is like, is whoever's on the top 50 list, do they all deserve to be there? Versus like, is there a more interesting, more compelling way to look at how we're going to group together the different generations of talent and who was really transcendent in their time or good in their time or whatever?
But Patrick,
Bob Cousy is also playing in Converse and he was selling insurance in the offseason. It's a different sport.
And even if you have the souped-up version of Twitter, it's only 280 characters. You cannot tweet all of these things. You cannot post a video online that is 4 or 5 minutes of you looking at these arguments. If you want arguments like that, if you want discussion like that, you come to the Knuckle Push-Ups podcast.
That's
or
right,
you
Sean.
Read absolutely anything that has been published on The Ringer in the history of its existence. You don't go to Yahoo Sports for this. Shout out Ben Rohrbach. No offense to you, sir. But Mr. LeJethro Jenkins, Mr. Nichols there, coming at Bob Cousy via social media, I'm not going to stand for it, all right?
And I'm not going to stand for anything that was published on Yahoo. So I think why don't we go to the next one here? Fuck that company. Let's go to the next place here. I am salty. Okay. More on that on a very special Knuckle Push-Ups where I just tell you my backstory. Sean, what do you got next? What's over there?
All right. How about let's talk about LeBron, because I know that you're fired up about this. First, we had this Lakers-Utah game where the Lakers just dragged Utah, just beat the hell out of them, and it made me really reassess my preseason leanings toward the Jazz as a basketball team. First, LeBron just really travels. He really just goes on a walk, and the ref's looking right at him, and it's not called, and it gets all over the internet, and people are just like, look at all the things that LeBron can get away with. Then you get the Jazz announcers. they get upset with LeBron because during play, he goes kind of like there was a viral video over the summer where didn't his son throw down a dunk and he ran out on the court while they were playing to do a dance because
what got everyone real worked up was that he was dunking in the layup line at a Sierra Canyon game. LeBron was. So yes, it was a twofer. People were upset about LeBron over celebrating, but they were also upset about him dunking in the layup line at a high school game.
And I get the thing, like, yeah, you want to be supportive of your kid, and okay, kudos to you being supportive of your kid. But isn't this just everything where LeBron, you know, the camera's always got to be on him, the spotlight's got to be on me,
I think it's one of those things where because it's LeBron, the spotlight just travels towards him.
That's true.
You know, I think it's the other side of the double edged sword.
So he gets out on the court in his socks. He's already, yeah. I guess, gotten rid of his sneakers. Patrick, do you side hot take right now that the Jazz personnel were right to be upset and the fans were right to be upset with LeBron's showing the other night in Utah?
Yes, LeBron, here is a ticket to a Greyhound bus. Take it to the driest state in the union. Like this, yeah, take a fucking bus. Because the whole situation is garbage. First of all, LeBron traveling is crap, but it's worse the refs didn't call him on it. Okay? It's worse that he got away with it. The only part of that video that was good was Bogdanovich's reaction to, like, are you going to let this happen? And they did. So then the Lakers continue, or they proceed to pound the Jazz into the ground to the point where LeBron has done his post-game ritual at the start of the fourth quarter, signed shoes for kids, and gone away. It's not that he was, like, just, I don't know, acting goofy and supporting his teammate for doing well on the floor. It's that he walked onto the floor during a live play with no shoes on just because it's like, no one's going to tell me not to do this. But the thing that's really infuriating is that LeBron responded to the Jazz announcers today, just basically saying, like, people are always going to try to drag you down. Can you imagine being so good at your job that you don't even have to work in the fourth quarter and that you've already given away your kids or you've – I'm sorry, you've already given away your shoes to a pair of kids who you hope you just made them proud. This is some real fucking elitist bullshit, man. Are you kidding me? That's not why people are upset. They're not upset that, like, you worked too hard or that you already gave your shoes away and that's why you don't have shoes on. It's because it is disrespectful that you walked onto the court during live play. Like, that's the part that's, like, you're not supposed to do, dog. I totally get it. Like, no one has ever told you no before. Yeah. I understand. But to play, what makes it so infuriating is that he knows that we know what he's doing, and he's doing it anyway. Like, he's just – it's twisting the knife. And it's kind of like what Kyrie did earlier in the week about the whole, like, life quote on Instagram. It's the same shit, man. That's not why people are booing you, dude. Like, so it's – but it's this type of, like, when you write your own narrative, you can say whatever you want.
Yep.
And to that, I say, take a fucking bus.
LeBron, the only person who's ever said no to LeBron is a judge in an intellectual property case over Taco Tuesday.
Sorry, dog. That one already exists.
All right, what do you got for me?
Sean, here's one I got for you. James Harden is having a statistical season we have not seen since the days of Wilt the Stilt Chamberlain. Harden is in the conversation for the greatest offensive player in history. Your thoughts on the beard?
Will Chamberlain, who's apparently better than Bob Cousy, I was told on the internet this week. James Harden averaging 39 points a game at pod time. You know, back in the day they used to say, well, at press time we have this, right, but the press is dead, so we'll just say at pod time.
Yeah.
39 points a game. Impressive, but consider the era. I mean, why did Will get the stats that he did? The era. Why is James Harden getting the stats that he does? The era. I mean, and it's all quite simple. The guy's getting to the foul line. What did he shoot in the 60-point game? 11 for 39?
Yeah.
He made 20-some-odd points at the free-throw line, missed 16 threes, but still hit 60 points. It's impossible to guard the guy. It's not necessarily because I mean, you can't tell me that James Harden is the most talented offensive player of all time. He's a very, very good offensive player, but he has managed to do the things that he does to such a degree in a high-scoring era that it's just impossible for him not to go off on you. He travels on nearly every possession. He shoots solely three-pointers and layups. He doesn't care what percentage he shoots from down there because he's just going to keep shooting them and sucking up possessions. And when all else fails, he's going to flail and get a foul. It's probably very easy for people to say, oh, you know, okay, boomer. I'm actually a millennial and not a proud one. I'm right on that cusp there, Patrick, because you're sitting in Generation X, and God bless you.
I don't know about that. I graduated in the year 2000, baby. I'm a first-gen millenn.
First-gen millenn? I thought 83 was the cutoff. I was born in 83.
That's fake news. Well, that's your first mistake.
Wikipedia was not right?
I graduated from high school in the year 2000.
So that makes you a millennial.
Doesn't that by definition make me a millennial?
Okay, so you're a millennial. But as you can see, we're not boomers here. But I think that our sports takes, they come from an honest place. And I just don't want to see that shit. I don't want to watch James Harden. And no, I don't think that he's the greatest offensive player since Wilt Chamberlain. He's certainly not Jordan. But you know what? I don't even think he's the best offensive player or one of the best two or three offensive players of this era. I would say that Curry and Durant are better offensive players. James Harden is just back on his bullshit like he is every season, and he's going to flame out in the Western Conference playoffs again, because once you get in the playoffs, you can't play like that and expect to go all the way to the end. You can't be begging for fouls every game and expect to get there. And the whole thing where he had the exchange with the fan, where the fan's like, we don't want to see a free throw contest, and Harden's like, well, nobody wants to see fouls either. Well, that was, what, in the process of them blowing a 22-point lead to the Spurs, where he has a missed dunk that goes through the net, back up, around the rim, and off it somehow. The referees think it's a miss when it was actually a make. And you know what? Fragile James Harden and the Rockets, they let that ruin their whole game. They lose to Lonnie Paxton out. Who the heck was the guy on San Antonio that went off?
But Lonnie Paxton.
Lonnie Walker Jr. He kicked their ass and said, I'm packing like Lonnie Paxton, back to hack and sack where I'm macking. All right, over, done, out, take a bus, James Harden.
All right, well, my blood pressure is a million over a million, so let's see if we can push this into full cardiac arrest. What do you got for me, Sean?
Patrick, I want your take on the Heat as a true Eastern Conference contender. You love that Jimmy Butler DNA running through that team, don't you?
Well, I think it's Jimmy Butler is essentially, how do I say this nicely? Cocaine. And I think Miami, known for several things, cocaine, one of them. And I think Jimmy Butler on the Heat could be good or could be real bad. And I think we're seeing the seeds have been sown for either crop. And yesterday, I mean, you're right. That team was playing pretty solid. They got beat by 20, but Jimmy Butler put up 40 points. I mean, so I think as long as everyone gets behind Jimmy, then you kind of win or lose with Butler. I don't know if that's going to work. I think they'll make the playoffs. I don't think they're up at contender level though. So I'm going to say hot take on this one. Because I'm not completely off the Butler bandwagon. I'm more doing a bus transfer to Bam Adebayo. I think he's a solid contributor for that team. So I'm going to say it's a hot take that they're a contender, but they're not the one true contender.
Take a bus, Patrick.
Okay. All right, last one, Sean. Let's close this thing up strong.
Yeah.
I want to talk about the MVP race. So right now, the two names that are getting kicked around the most, it's either Luka Doncic or Giannis Antetokounmpo. Luka Doncic is being heralded as basically the second coming of Magic Johnson. Giannis won the MVP last year and is having a better statistical season in 19-20 than he did in 18-19. So which one's the real MVP? Is it Luka? Is it Giannis? I'm going to say it's Giannis.
Yeah, I'm going with you on that too. I'd say take a bus on Luka, unfortunately. I love, you know, what Luka's doing. I loved what James Harden was doing when he first came in the league. So I'm probably going to sour on Luka Doncic at some point. But right now, loving what that guy's doing. It's nice to see the Mavs back in the picture again after them. It's kind of fallen off for a few seasons, waiting for Dirk to go out to pasture. But Giannis, we keep talking about how Milwaukee is one bad day away, one injury away from being a terrible team. They're playing really well around him, and his play is just off the charts right now. So how could you not give the MVP to that guy? I mean, frankly, because it's not just about individual statistics. We've learned time and time again over the years, it's about winning. And the Rockets, yeah, they're good. They're 13-7. Bucks are the best team in the Eastern Conference right now, and there's no question who the best player on that team is, and it's Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Take a Fresh Prince of Bel Air style graffiti colored bus back to Dallas, Luka Doncic. That sounded a lot better in my head. But take a uniquely painted city jersey colored bus.
Well, I think it sounded great, Patrick.
I appreciate that, Sean. Thank you.
Sorry, we got all that out of our system. I am way too charged up to go to bed. I got to edit this thing now, so that's actually good because I got this rush of energy. I hope that you feel the rush of energy from the Knuckle Push-Up Podcast because, you know, we're just coming at you hard. We're going to be playing, like, Fuel songs the whole time at the as beds under all of these takes. I hope you get fired up. I'm Sean Silver. We'll be back in your earbuds again next week with a new Knuckle Push-Ups podcast. Patrick, any parting words?
It's time for the Masked Singer and 1,000 push-ups. I'm jazzed up. Let's go.
Take a bus. She dreams, she dreams.